Welcome to the Hilltop United Methodist Church podcast. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.
Our first scripture reading this morning is found in the book of Judges. I'll be reading chapter 6, verses 1 through 6. If you're interested in following along in a pew Bible, you can find that on pages 222 and 223. The Israelites did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord gave them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. The hand of Midian prevailed over Israel, and because of Midian, the Israelites provided for themselves hiding places in the mountains, caves, and strongholds. For whenever the Israelites put in seed, the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east would come up against them. They would encamp against them and destroy the produce of the land as far as the neighborhood of Gaza, and leave no sustenance in Israel, and no sheep or ox or donkey. For they and their livestock would come up, and they would even bring their tents. As thick as locusts, neither they nor their camels could be counted. So they wasted the land as they came in. Thus Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midian, and the Israelites cried out for the Lord for help.
In February of the year 2000, I had to go down to a Blackstone Retreat Center south of Richmond, Virginia, in order to be interrogated the first time to see if I was qualified to be a United Methodist pastor. And one of the questions that I was asked that day was by a gentleman who later apologized for the stupidity of the question, which he basically said, with you having served in the military for 23 years, do you really believe you can be a pastor of a church? And I looked at him quietly and composed my thoughts, and I said, well, I would like to think for 23 years I was in service to the country, and now I'm in a new type of service. I'm going to serve God through being a pastor in a church. He looked at me sort of funny, and he said, I deserved a more hostile answer than that. That was the stupidest question I've ever asked in my life. The important for us to, as we think back to what we just sang a second ago, if you love Jesus, why not serve him? If you love Jesus, why not serve him? The title of today was sort of programs, and I promised that I would try to stay on heart talk as much as I could. For those of you that want the head talk, I commend this to you. Take a glance at it and see what's in there that can talk to your head about things that are going on. And for everybody else, we have something here called Everything Else, which is things we won't cover with the building and worship and next week with people and outside the church. And we have here worship, which is an awful lot of music and art stuff. And there's a lot of stuff that's in there that's very good for you. But I want to focus just for a moment or two over time and talent. We come in with a stewardship campaign and we talk about treasure most of the time because we need the treasure to turn the lights on. We need the treasure to pay for various salaries of your staff. But it's really a three-column test. Our goal is a three-column test: time, talent, and treasure. It's not pick one, it's pick something off all three. Pick something off all three. Paul was dealing with the same issue in Romans when he would say to the church that he hadn't gotten to yet in Rome, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercy of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. He didn't say present your bodies to be burned up on some kind of sacrificial level. It was to be a living sacrifice on behalf of the church. I would say to you, one of the most important elements that we have of any stewardship campaign is focusing on the idea of reminding ourselves that it's time, talent, and treasure, not just treasure. It's time and talent as well. There are so many things that we need help with here at the church. Many of them are relatively mundane and relatively easy to do. Some of them can be absolutely terrorizing, okay? Running the sound booth, it can be 99% boredom and 1% sheer terror when something goes wrong. But it needs qualified people to help us with that. What Bob is doing up here as a liturgist is important. There's all kinds of things that you can do within this church. I would hope that we would see that we have the capacity within us to answer that call. I'm going to talk in a few minutes about Gideon and how it is that he answers God's call, but 300 others answered his call as well. But the invitation for us is to see that we can make, as in Malachi 3:18, that we can see the distinction between those who serve God and one who does not serve him. I don't wish to have people respond out of guilt. That is not my style. I want you to respond because your heart is aglow. Your heart is on fire. Your heart is on fire for God. That's the invitation for you today, is to stop and pause and say, yes, my treasure is important, but I also want to contribute time and talent to this wonderful church. God bless you. Thank you very much. I'm going to pick up the second half of the reading, although the reading that what we're going to actually be talking from is basically the character of Gideon himself. And not only isolated the passages that we've read today, we'll come back and try to fill in some blanks there for us. This is from the book of Judges, and I'll be reading from chapter 6, verse 11 through 18 on page 223 of the Old Testament section of the Pew Bible. If you hear this and you start having some memories and start thinking, I've heard some of this before, that's true. You probably have heard some of the elements of this before. And I meant to get with Bob just for a second and go over a few of the words, and I forgot, forgive me on that. We keep in this Old Testament section getting harder and harder words, so I'll do the best I can, but I assure you the proper pronunciation of Abiezerite has no bearing on the overall sermon. I promise that. Page 223 of the Pew Bible. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak of Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, as his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Let's say that again. He's beating out wheat, hiding in a cave. "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Gideon answered him, "But sir, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his wonderful deeds that our ancestors recounted to us, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out from Egypt? But now the Lord has cast us off and given us into the hands of Midian.' Then the Lord turned to him and said, 'Go in this might of yours and deliver Israel from the hands of Midian. I hereby commission you. I hereby commission you.' Gideon responded, 'But sir, how can I deliver Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family.' The Lord said to him, 'But I will be with you, and you shall strike down the Midianites, every one of them.' Then he said to him, 'If now I have found favor with you, then show me a sign that it is you who speak to me. Do not depart from here until I come to you and bring out my present and set it before you.' And he said, 'I will stay until you return.'" This is the word of God for the people of God. The time we are in is a time in between Joshua and Saul, in between Joshua and eventually David. Joshua opens his book, the book of Joshua opens with Yahweh giving an impassioned address to the people of Israel. And he would say in the first chapter, what we would call the first chapter of Joshua, that I've commanded you to be brave and strong, haven't I? Don't be alarmed or terrified, because the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And he also tells them to never stop speaking about this instruction scroll. There's a scroll that's been given to the children of Israel. Recite it day and night so you can carefully obey everything written in it. Then you will accomplish your objectives and you will succeed. And then right before we get to Samuel and Saul, we have the last words out of the book of Judges. And it says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Each person did what they thought to be right. Do you get the picture? We start off the time in the Promised Land with God saying to Joshua and the children of Israel, here's my instructions for you. Do these and things will go fairly well. And then you get to the end of the book of Judges, and that they are doing exactly the opposite of that. Each person is doing what they think is the correct correct thing for them. It's what works for them. If it feels good, do it. Wasn't that the words from the 1960s? If it feels good, do it. Now, you may sit here and go, well, maybe that's what's going on with this idea of the book of Judges. And to some extent it is. When we say the word judges, our mind thinks Supreme Court. We think Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? That's something like what we think about. We think of perhaps Antonin Scalia. But we don't necessarily think of other things. And part of that is because the word that is translated for judges here is actually larger than that. It's actually larger than that. And it comes from a word that we find in Micah 6:8. Micah 6:8 is an important lens for us to always interpret the Bible. What is the passage out of Micah 6:8? You know, children of Israel, what God has called you to do. It's to seek justice, to love kindness, and to walk in humility, to walk humbly with your God. Does that sound familiar? And the words that are there in Hebrew are mishpat chesed. Did I spit on you there, Bob? Okay, then I didn't say it right, okay? Mishpat chesed and sane. That's the three words. And the word for judges, It's a derivation of this word mishpat. It's shafat. I've got it right here, and I still couldn't quite read it. Shafat. Would you like to have this for part of your sermon? Yes. Okay, all right. Part of your words. And the issue of a person operating along the idea of seeking justice is that the person who is implementing this is all three branches of what we think of government. It's the creator of the ordinances, the legislative branch. It's the person who decides what's right or wrong, the judicial branch. And then the third part is the executive, who carries out either the will of the legislative or what the judge says needs to be done. So that's really what the term judge in this context means. And it probably would have been better if we'd have called this particular book of the Bible the story of the governors. Story of the governors. Because that's what really is closer to what they are. And rarely in the Bible, in the book of Judges, is the judge, the governor, operating with all 12 tribes. It's often three or four tribes here, three or four tribes there, three or four tribes there. And what you heard Bob start off with was a bit of the formula out of Judges. And the formula is that the people drift away from God, bad things happen. They lift up their voice to God, say, fix this, we've screwed this up, would you fix this? Then God gives them a judge. And we think of their names like Deborah. Deborah was a judge. I preached a sermon last year on Deborah. I called her Devorah, which is how you would say that in Hebrew. We think here of Gideon. He's a judge. And Samson, he's a judge. But slowly over time, what happens is that the judges themselves become more like the people. And you're watching that transition here occur in this. Because Gideon will start off full of humility But having a right attitude towards God. God can do these things, even though he challenged God. We'll come back to that in a second. But he works in the middle of the story, and he's both full of God's Spirit, full of God's power. But then by the end of the story, he is got a place where his humility has gone away. He thinks of himself only in powerful terms. And so he moves from being a person who is an idol breaker at the beginning of the story to, by the time the story has ended, about the middle of chapter 8 or so, he's an idol maker. So he goes from idol breaking to idol making. And he sort of goes over to the dark side of the force. Think Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader kind of thing. Although I'm not sure he ever quite turns into Darth Vader. Come on, guys, loosen up. Okay. I'm trying hard. So that's where he goes over to. So you might ask yourself the question, sort of what happens? And for those of you that are not familiar with the Gideon story, I want to make sure we're all clear what's happened here. Gideon is going to go lead people. He's gonna fall out in front of 32,000 soldiers, which is about five-ish tribes of Israel that have provided soldiers for this army to help kick the Midianites out. And God says, well, first thing is that I don't want anybody here who doesn't want to be here, all right? So 22,000 leave, just like that. It's like, I know what happens in war. I could get killed, so I'm going to get out of here, all right? And then that's still too many, though, for God. And God says, turns around and says, I want you to do this testing of drinking water. And they go down there, and 9,700 of them drink water one way, and 300 of them drink water another way. And God says, I want the 300. The 300 is what you're going to use. And I want you to use them. And then God gives them the battle plan. God lays out the battle plan, what he wants them to do. And Gideon and his force go and do exactly what it is that God calls them to do. Now, can you imagine being part of a force of 32,000, and then all of a sudden they keep winnowing it down to the point that you're down, you're part of the 300, and you're going to take on a force that has just been described to us like locusts? They're like locusts. It means there's thousands of them, thousands of them. So there's something that Gideon has done here. There's some element of what has happened that Gideon is able to rally the troops. He's able to speak to them in some kind of fashion that causes them to come out of the locker room fired up and ready. When I was a kid, we used to watch the stories of Notre Dame football and Newt Rockne, and he would give these pep talks at halftime that they would go knock the doors down to get out of there and play football. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm breaking Marilyn's rule. She said not to talk about football. Okay, she's not here to hear it. Oh, she's gone. But you have to wonder what kind of pep talk Gideon gave to have these 300 people be, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. 300 people come out and do what they did. And the answer is found in the judges, which he's told that one of the things that's going to happen to him is the Spirit of the Lord is going to come to him. The Spirit of the Lord is going to come to him. So what does that Spirit of the Lord look like? It doesn't exactly say precisely, but Paul, in one of his letters to Timothy, would describe the fact that for God gave us a spirit, not of fear. Isn't that what they need at this particular moment? 300 against 100,000 or something? For God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of what? Of power, of love, and self-control. Power, love, and self-control. And so consequently, that is what happens. And you wonder if perhaps it's not that kind of nature that causes these 300 to step out and say, we can follow this guy. We can follow this guy, even though his plan sounds crazy, for us to come in with this shofar and I'm going to blow a bugle. I've got lamps underneath a jug here. Got my sword at my side, and I'm going to come in and I'm going to proclaim about Yahweh's greatness. And unfortunately, you begin to get this little foretaste of Gideon's ego that they're fighting on behalf of both Yahweh and Gideon. It's a little hint that things are not going to quite go exactly according to Yahweh's plan. And they come out, but they're able to do that. And so you think perhaps, maybe, just maybe, this idea of operating not out of fear, but instead of operating from power, love, and self-control. I want to talk about those three just for a second. Power. How it is that people use power. Here, they use this power in order to step forward and speak up on behalf of the children of Israel that needed the Midianites to go. I mean, what was going on? Was it the Midianites being there a good thing or a bad thing for the agricultural health of that world? It was a bad thing. They were taking all the food. Don't you imagine that starvation was going on in that place? I wonder if perhaps that's not an example of using power for mishpat, justice. Mishpat for justice. Love is easy. Love is easy because what God says in Micah 6:8 is for us to operate from love. Paul says it in that passage in Timothy, to operate from love. And what is love? In Hebrew, it's chesed. It's this God's unmerited mercy. God pours out mercy upon us. Grace is what we would call it in English. Grace upon grace, if you go to the John 1 passage. Grace upon grace is poured out. And that is part of what goes on in order for us to be different kind of people in the world. Chesed. Then finally, you have this word humility, sane. Sane. And it appears two times in the whole Hebrew Bible. Once in a psalm and once in that passage in Micah 6:8. It's implied. It's implied. And I would say to you, Gideon, I mean, you heard the conversation that Gideon had. It was, who am I? Have you heard that conversation before? Does that remind you of Moses' conversation? Who the heck am I? Who the heck am I to go do this? But nonetheless, that is part of who God calls. God calls sometimes those who don't think they have the skills, but with God's help, they're able to do this. And I would see that as an element of humility. Now, we just sang a few minutes ago, this sang out of Jacob's Ladder, and this idea of being a soldier of the cross. Being a soldier of the cross. What did the angel, what did the messenger say to Gideon? I hereby commission you. Did you hear that? I hereby commission you. All right? Hilltop, I hereby commission you to be soldiers of the cross. Maybe what I'm doing is actually recommissioning you, because most of you have been baptized. And when you were baptized, you became a soldier of the cross. You were commissioned in that ceremony. But some of you may need a little bit of recommissioning. And what is it that you go do? You go do and you live out this idea from 2 Timothy 1. For God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. Power, love, and self-control. That's how you go about being a soldier of the cross. I posted a quote by Dutch theologian Kierkegaard. We may get to a point where I say a Dutch theologian, you all go Kierkegaard, just like I can say a German theologian, and you all go, yeah, there we go, okay? We may get to a place where I can go a Dutch theologian, Kierkegaard, and that's pretty good. But he made the comment that if you really follow the gospel of Jesus, it's a death sentence. It's a death sentence because it's so contrary to what the rest of the world would have you do. Because you're going to use power in a kind, gentle way. You're going to show love in all that you do, and you're going to exercise self-control in humility. Is that the way the world operates? No, it's not. Jesus would say, I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world, you will have tribulation. In the world, you will have tribulation. Being a follower of Jesus doesn't lead to everything being wonderful and having BMWs and $100,000 petty cash in your checking account. But take heart, I have overcome the world. That's the message for us. So I want to come back to that Micah 6:8 and those three words, mishpat, to seek justice. And that's what these judges were doing, was seeking justice. And they were hopefully doing it in a way as much as possible to display God's love, God's unmerited mercy poured out on us, God's kindness poured on it, God's chesed. But we do that not in a state of hubris, not in a state of self-absorption. Rather, we do that in a state of humility, like Moses, who am I? Like Gideon, who am I? And your reaction when we call and ask you to maybe help with something may be, who am I? And the answer is, you've been called. You've been called by God. And it's an invitation for you to step out boldly on that. Now, in a minute, we're going to sing the covenant prayer. Now, I've got actually two reasons for it. One is it actually relates to the sermon. It actually does relate to the sermon. The second thing is we're going to sing it when the bishop is here in 2 weeks. I want you guys to practice it a little bit so we can have an idea. It's a little syncopated, but it's beautiful because it's taken words from John Wesley of almost 300 years ago, and it's brought them into our time with our kind of beat, our kind of rhythm with it. But it's this commitment to be in covenant for the Lord. And it's all about humility. Put me to doing what you will put me to doing. It's not about, I'm going to go to work for what I want to do. Let's go back to that conversation in Virginia. Let's go back to that conversation in Virginia that I used at the ministry moment, for those of you who heard it. I struggled for the first 3 or 4 years I was in ministry. And the reason I struggled for the first 3 or 4 years is that I was answering God's call, but it was on my terms. It was totally on my terms. And so, consequently, when I was in ministry on my terms, I was struggling. And once I got to a place, and Marilyn helped me with this a great deal, but once I got to a place that I said, you know, it's not my task, it's not my mission, it's not my way I see this, but yours, everything began to fall into place. Everything began to fall into place. And all the struggles that I had had up to that time began to slowly go away. What is it you're fighting God on? What is it you're struggling with and where God may be calling you and inviting you to be involved in leadership of His church, in participating in God's church in some kind of way? Think about that as you sing the words to our covenant prayer. Please stand as you are able.
Welcome to the Hilltop United Methodist Church podcast. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.